Welcome to Winging It in Motown Radio. Hello, everybody. It's draft week. I'm your host, Jeff, and JJ and Mike and Peter are all joining us tonight with their expertise on all things expansion.
Howdy.
How are you?
Hey.
I had a good day. Well.
Yeah.
I got to help my greatest day ever? Yeah, I got to help my father-in-law move a really big mirror, something I can definitely see myself doing.
You didn't break it for a couple years of bad luck, did you?
See yourself doing it.
Yeah, there you go.
Because it's a mirror.
Put a
you know that I reflect on that.
All right.
Good night, folks.
This is the earliest we've ever gone downhill in the podcast.
This
less
is quickly
than 30 seconds in.
Yeah.
Let's get into it. But before we get into it, let's talk about the Griffins really quick. They won it all in the AHL. That's pretty cool, huh? Thoughts?
It's almost like we have the 31st best NHL team.
The snark answer is that they could probably beat several NHL teams, including perhaps us.
I can think of at least three.
That's not true. No, it was a really great run. I think they dominated their way through the Western Conference playoffs, and they came across Syracuse, and that was a really good matchup. Like, that was a really close series, despite it only going six. But ultimately, Grand Rapids was the better team, the more disciplined team. I think Todd Nelson did some really great things with the group down there. Tyler Bertuzzi, not only he won the playoff MVP award, and he set the record for the he is now like the leading goal scorer of all time for the Griffins in the playoffs, which is great because he's not bad in the regular season, but he's not like great. But once the playoffs roll around, that kid's a monster. Ultimately, it was more of an AHL team than like a NHL Stars, which is kind of how you win in the AHL anyway. But there's a decent amount of promise down there. I thought that Joe Hicketts did really well. Robbie Russo had ups and downs. Svechnikov played a really solid two-way game. Like, he wasn't really spectacular in the playoffs, but he put up a lot of points, and he was tough to play against. Tyler Bertuzzi, of course, was really, really good. So out of that group, I think that's and Thomas Nosek was insanely good pivoting the top line. So out of that group, I think those are the kids that we're going to be looking at getting a good shot next year. Possibly Dan Renouf as well, but I don't know. Like, I'm not really that high on Dan Renouf. So it's really promising. It's great to see. Like, there were times watching the AHL playoffs where I was everybody's excited. Like, when the clock ran down in the final of game six, like, I stood up and I cheered. It was good to finally be able to cheer out loud at goals being scored again, because it's been too long since that happened. But yeah, go Griffs.
Yeah, it was nice to see, you know, specifically Bertuzzi and Nosek and, you know, the guys who will, like you said, will actually have a chance to be on the team, probably will be on the team next year, actually do well. And Koro was a net, and he's very likely the backup next year, which we'll get into.
They've run into Syracuse in the playoffs before, haven't they?
2013.
Yeah, the last time they won the Calder Cup, they won over Syracuse, and Syracuse had, like,
Tyler Johnson, Palat,
and
right?
Tyler Johnson, Palat. They were a much shittier team.
Was Kucherov
back then,
on that team?
I'm not sure if it was Kucherov or Nemestikov. Nemestikov was. I don't know if Kucherov was.
Vasilevsky, was he the goalie?
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, basically Tampa Bay Lightning. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Jake Dotchkin was down there for them. Ooh. In this one, and I hate that guy. He's basically like the next Radko Gudas. He's dirty as all get out. But
all right,
I don't care about them. Fuck them.
Yeah.
Let's do the expansion draft talk now. What everyone's listening for, of course.
Oh boy.
As of recording this, Vegas has announced they're kind of done making deals with teams. Monday was the deadline that they set for themselves. Tuesday they're going to spend picking the players they want and. Based off of all the deals they made. But Peter, Mike, you guys have been pretty much our experts on this throughout the whole process with all your posts and whatnot on WHIM. So Peter, you want to just give us a quick rundown how the protection lists work in regards to the expansion draft?
Yeah. All right. So if you're just, you know, I'm not going to go into all the details, but if you're just, you know, kind of getting interested in this, I'll run through the basics. So each team got to submit a protected player list. They could either protect 7 forwards, 3 defensemen, and 1 goalie, or they could protect 8 skaters, you know, a skater being a forward or a defenseman, and 1 goalie. So no matter what, they can only protect 1 goalie. The 8 skater option would be for teams like Nashville, who have, you know, an additional defenseman outside of the first 3 that they want to protect. You know, so they do get to do that, but they lose 3 forward slots, basically. Players that have no move clauses have to be protected unless they waive them. There's a couple players that did that. Marc-Andre Fleury did. Tobias Enstrom on Winnipeg did. And Eric Staal on Minnesota. Those are the 3 that come to mind right off the top of my head. First and second year pros were exempt. And then there were these exposure requirements that I'm not going to go into great detail on it, but basically each team had to expose 2 forwards, 1 defenseman, and 1 goalie that met, you know, these minimum requirements, basically to, you know, make sure that, you know, players that, you know, had played before in the NHL, were exposed, you know, so, you know, to keep teams from just kind of not exposing anything good. Let's see. Yeah. So those were, you know, those were the big rules. For the teams, and the teams submitted their protected list to Vegas, and they were announced yesterday morning at sometime between 10 and 10:30. It was supposed to be 10, and then the PR department said that, by the way, it's 10:30, and at that point all the lists started leaking anyway. So
that's classic NHL. Like, didn't they want to do it? It's like, we're gonna release it all at 10, so we're gonna release it all at once, and there's no leaks about everything, and then it's delayed, and then it just leaks out anyway.
And then they didn't even get 10:30 right. Like, I was trying to cover that with the Post, and I'm sitting there at like 10:35. I'm like, where is the freaking list? And we ended up getting it from, I think Prashant found a link from Russian Machine Never Breaks.
I ended up getting it. I don't remember what it was after 10:30 when I ended up getting it from the Wings PR, I think. But
yeah,
I know the league. I think what they did was like they sent it to the teams, and then the teams PR sent it to their lists. I don't know, maybe. So Mike, quick rundown on the limitations Vegas has in when it comes to selecting players.
All right. The biggest one is they're only taking 1 player from every team. Now, that doesn't mean that they're not going to get more players from a certain team, but they can only make 1 selection. The way around that is if they want to buy somebody's, we'll call it loyalty for lack of a better word, they're essentially being allowed to extort players and picks from teams. So, like, just for example, if the Wings had exposed Zetterberg and then realized after the lists were turned in, oh my God, we did not want to expose Zetterberg, we could then pay Vegas in other prospects, players, or picks to have them not select Zetterberg. So they're only going to make 1 selection. They might end up with more, but each team is just 1 selection. They can have 10 contracts at the end of the selection term that are due to be negotiated this summer. So whether that's a UFA or an RFA, they've only got 10 contracts from the selection time that they can have open to negotiate. Everybody else needs to be under contract through next season at least. They have to take a minimum of 14 forwards, 9 defensemen, and 3 goalies with a total of 30 players. So there is a little bit of mystery to it on where they'll draft extra players from. There has been talk from George McPhee that one strategy they may or may not employ is to load up on goalies and hold them ransom. But we don't have any kind of confirmation from that. And that was months and months and months ago. He mentioned that on a radio interview. So we don't know if it's still holding valid or if they've changed it based on who's available. But that's essentially what they're looking at. They have to meet 60% of this previous year's cap with their selections. And I think that's the last requirement. So that's probably going to be the biggest one is meeting the financials, but with some of what we've heard, I'm not sure that's going to be too much of a problem.
So with the wings, it was pretty – I mean, we thought so. It was pretty obvious the main players they were going to protect. You knew Zetterberg, Nielsen, Nyquist, Mantha, FNICU, Tatar. They would all be protected amongst the forwards. The final spot, in theory, came down to Ablicator versus Helm versus Riley Sheahan. And we all were kind of in agreement. We wouldn't protect Ablicator, but the team was going to, and they did. Likewise on defense with the Kaiser, and they went with Mike Green, which was obvious, and Nick Jensen. It kind of a lot of, you know, Jensen or Ouellette. I mean, I would have protected both and exposed to Kaiser, but they ended up going with Jensen. And then the big surprise that we all found out on Sunday morning was that Jimmy Howard was protected instead of Peter Mrazek. JJ, I'll start with you. Just where's your head at on everything in regards to Mrazek being exposed?
Where's your head at?
Initially, it was a really big shock, but the more I've had time to process it, it's like even with the low level of faith in the Red Wings organization, there has to be a sensible reason for it. It's been coming out that they're essentially done with his attitude problems. Nobody knows exactly how deep that goes other than the concept of he's not very popular in the locker room. Apparently, it came down to the last year's contract negotiations weren't very good, and he apparently was not happy that the team had not been able to move Howard out, and at some point, like, he stormed out of a practice, and it was just like he was we always knew he was a confident, downright cocky kid, but there are rumblings out there that it goes deeper than that, and I think that there's a lot of conspiracy about, there's a good chance that he might not be taken because there are a lot of goalies out there, and necessarily taking a $4 million guy who's probably going to be your backup and then he's going to be an RFA isn't really that beneficial, or, you know, they might flip him, but they may just go for somebody else. I think they can haul and expose Mrazek with the plan of Mrazek's gone. Regardless of if he makes it through this draft, I still think Mrazek is gone. And I don't know. Like, I'm more of a fan of the Red Wings than I am of any individual player. And I think that Ken Holland has done a lot of stupid things. And I think not getting value for Mrazek, if it is a case that Mrazek's Red Wings career is over, is a mistake. I mean, you can always argue that not losing Riley Sheahan for nothing, or not losing Darren Helm or Ouellette or Sproul or literally anybody else that we're exposing is kind of an asset gained along with Mrazek's $4 million in cap space. But I can't believe that you wouldn't be able to have sold this guy off. So I'm not happy about it, but I'm also not exactly grabbing my pitchfork and torch and marching on the LCA.
Peter, Mike?
I was telling you guys this before. Probably about, I want to say 4 days ago, three or four days before the list came out, I heard from what I can only call a definitely a very reliable source that this was the plan, that Mrazek was going to be exposed, and that the team wanted, wanted him to get taken, and also that it was because of the attitude issues. I couldn't really say anything at the time, but I didn't. I don't know. I guess I hadn't really. Now that JJ mentioned that before, I do remember, hearing. I think when Coro was the starter for the outdoor game, I remember hearing rumblings at that time. And so, when I heard this, I was like, oh, that can't be right. That can't be true. It's got to be, a mistake. And then a couple days before the list came out, there were rumors that, Mrazek was on the block. So I guess I wasn't shocked when I heard that, but I really thought that, the stuff I heard before, I thought that it was just going to be a mistake and he was going to get protected. But, the more that comes out, the more I am pretty much convinced that they do want to get rid of Mrazek. And, you know, I said this before in comments and stuff. I think, you know, I'm on board with JJ that I think that, you know, if that was the plan, I mean, then that's the plan. And I get that. But I really don't see why they couldn't have gotten something for him if that was, you know, that was going to be the plan. But we'll see.
Yeah, I'm on board with that as well, Peter. Like, there had to have been value somewhere from some team, especially somebody like, you know, Arizona, who looks like, depending on how the pick process goes, they could really be hurting for a goalie after Wednesday night. So to lose Mrazek for nothing is definitely, I'm going to say, borderline shameful. But I mean, I know I've mentioned it to you guys a couple of times just in our little private chat thing, and I don't know if I ever put this thought to paper, but at certain times in the season, I was wondering, out loud, at least to you guys, at what point are they going to protect Howard over Mrazek? Because it looks like a possibility. And apparently that possibility happened. So, but I mean, I'm not heartbroken over it. I mean, it sucks, but when you look in the grand scheme of things, this team is going to go through a rebuild at some point. And that point is going to be sooner rather than later. Yeah. Well, it needs to be now, but I think part of what we're seeing
unofficially now.
Yeah. Yeah. Unofficially now. But I think what we're seeing with, yeah. And that's the thing, JJ, is with this selection, I think part of that is probably definitely due to the attitude issues and all that kind of stuff that we've seen come out over the past couple of days. But I think Holland is so far into the we can be right back in it next year thought pattern that he couldn't possibly fathom exposing Jimmy Howard. Or even moving him, except for a king's ransom, because that's part of what we heard is that he was shopping Howard, but nobody would give him the return he wanted.
Yeah, and, so, and here's the thing: if we'd been recording this on Sunday afternoon, there would have been way more vitriol and stamping our feet and
oh, absolutely
ranting about this. So
yeah,
the fact that Wim seems to all be in lockstep with like not that big of a problem. Is I mean you have to take a step back and realize that it's not, they're not being evilly run by corruptly stupid people who just want to see the Red Wings suffer and get destroyed. There, I mean, there has to be a reason.
Yeah,
the reason can be it can be bad. You have to agree with that. But I mean, there's a lot of extra stuff. Like I get the argument that Jimmy Howard is not going to be the Red Wings goalie the next time the Red Wings are good again. There is also a good argument that Peter Mrazek wouldn't be that guy either. We're looking 5 years into the future. Mrazek will be 30. He should still be NHL caliber. He should still be good. He's definitely going to be one contract beyond what he is right now at $4 million. He's probably going to be two contracts beyond that, making I don't know how much. And I'm fundamentally against paying goaltenders that much money unless they are Carey Price, and I don't know that Mrazek is ever going to be Carey Price consistently. So it's not a concept of like I just want him gone. Here's the thing: and Ansar Khan wrote an article in January about how Mrazek had attitude problems. So this isn't something that came necessarily out of the blue. Like the organization keeps it close to the vest. They're not gonna shit on players. And honestly, I know that we've spoken a lot over the last few years about how the Diggers are basically just puppets for Ken Holland, and they'll just say whatever he wants. I'm not reading this out of this. I have a feeling that Ken Holland would rather Ansar Khan or Greg Cooper actually wrote one tonight that had not called Mrazek out like that. I know that Boston basically perfected this in the last few years of just running the guy out of town by crucifying
him.
Yeah, but Boston got really well known for it recently. So I can understand if people don't want to give the Red Wings and the press in Detroit the benefit of the doubt. Trust me, I'm not going to expect that because I don't think that they deserve the benefit of the doubt. But just the way I'm looking at it is I don't think the Red Wings wanted Peter Mrazek attitude problems being exposed to be out there. Honestly, and the one thing that I don't want to dabble in too much, but there's a real possibility that this goes beyond just attitude problems, because Athanasiou has been benched for attitude, like he just hasn't back-checked hard enough. There's an honest possibility that Peter Mrazek is a huge piece of shit, and if that's the case, I want him gone. Unfortunately, I've got no evidence for that, so... If we get evidence, I'm asking people to be open to the possibility that there is evidence for that. It'll make you sleep better, I guess.
Yeah. The flip side of that, though, JJ, is, and I forget who, but one of the commenters brought this up earlier, and I posted a quick comment on it in one of the pieces. But the flip side is there the possibility that this management coaching leadership group, you know, call the cabal, whatever you want to call it. Is it possible that they just don't know how to deal with exuberant personalities or different personalities? Because if you look at things, Athanasiou and Tatar and Mrazek, Athanasiou can be quite boisterous on the ice. They say he's a little cocky, and we read stuff all season that there might be an attitude problem there. And we've heard stuff before about people kind of crapping on Tatar's emotion that he tends to feed off during games. And now we hear something about Peter Mrazek. And if you look back over the last 20 years, going back into the Yzerman era, how many out there on the ice loud personalities has this team had versus how many guys have we had where it's just, you know, sit down, shut up, and show people up with your play?
Yeah, and the stoic Western Canadian ideal that permeates hockey everywhere.
And I think we've had a lot of that. And I know that, you know, Zetterberg had the stall next to Yzerman for a while, and he got to learn from both him and Lidstrom, you know, the ins and outs of being the captain. But I'm not sure that any of them ever had to truly deal with big personalities on the ice, except for maybe when Fedorov was here. And we see how
Brett Hull was a pretty big personality.
Brett Hull was here for
Chris Chelios was how many a pretty years? Big personality. Kirk Maltby kind of thrived on personality, but yeah, that's a different. He was more of a Steve Ott type than a showboater. Honestly, there is a huge concern that the Red Wings are a little caveman dinosaur like in terms of that, wanting the stoic Western Canadian, the whole you know, Canadian heart, European skill bullshit that came, was that Vancouver that came out of.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm terrified that they are trying to beat creativity out, and that's but there's a difference between, you know, maybe benching a guy for potentially showboating and exposing him to the expansion draft.
Yes.
Jeff Blashill spent a lot of time, like, he spent a lot of time with the press specifically saying how much he believes in Athanasiou's potential to be a star. And he said that with Mrazek too. Like, these guys have the talent to do this. They've just got to get the focus right. And so, yeah, despite my terror that what's going to happen is that they're trying to turn these kids into robots and take away essentially what's special about them, is at some point the buck has to stop with, they left him exposed to the expansion draft. And that's huge to me.
Agreed. And I'm not saying that, you know, that was right of them to do, because maybe they're going for this whole, you know, team mantra. But I'm just saying it might be a contributing factor, and kind of truthfully a red flag for the leadership of this organization.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of places that this organization needs to evolve, and I do believe that dealing with that kind of a talent is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of evolving, the NHL is actually going to evolve into a 31-team league, and this expansion draft is going to happen. Do you guys all think Mrazek's going to be Vegas's pick? Or do they go off the board and they take a Sheahan or a Helm or a Glendening or a Xavier Ouellette?
I'm picking Mrazek.
I'm still torn. There are definitely goalies. I don't want to say better or more consistent than Mrazek, but that's essentially what it boils down to.
You although assume in limited Fleury's roles. Going, right?
Oh, yeah, I think we're all assuming Fleury's going.
It sounds like that's pretty much done.
Yeah, like Fleury said his goodbyes to the Penguins. Like,
and so you figure he's already there. You got Ranta is available. Is it Grubauer? Those are some of the names I've seen a lot of.
Yeah, I think Grubauer is probably the best pick to come out of Washington. They've got some decent depth players in there, but Grubauer has really looked and albeit behind a President's Trophy winning team, so you know, take it with a grain of salt. But in limited action, he's looked like he's got the possibility to be right behind Braden Holtby in terms of skill level. I mean, he's got potential to be a real good guy. So I'd definitely go with at least Fleury and Grubauer. But then after that, I think the list starts getting iffier depending on how Vegas wants to value guys. Like Ranta looks good, but he's a couple years older than Mrazek. There's this kid out in Edmonton, Laurent Brossois, who has had ups and downs this past year. He really turned it on. I think I wrote a little bit about him during our first mock drafts for the expansion draft, but he looks pretty good. The two kids out in Columbus, Anton Forsberg and Jonas Korpisalo, they look pretty good. There's even a ECHL guy out in Carolina, Daniel Altschuler, who didn't do quite so hot in the AHL this season and last season as he did in the ECHL, but he's still had really good numbers at some levels, and it's going to take some time for him to adapt, but I mean, names are out there. It all depends on how Vegas wants to value these guys.
I mean, yeah, I think I see Vegas taking Mrazek as either playing him in like a backup 1A role or 1B role. I don't think that's the most likely, but I could see that happening. From the beginning, my tandem, you know, once they said Fleury was going to go there, was I would pick Grubauer as his backup, because I think, you know, it's always tough, you know, the standard expression, goalies are voodoo, you know, but, you know, what we've seen from Grubauer so far, it definitely looks very promising. You know, looks like, you know, the beginning of possibly somebody who could develop into a top NHL starting goalie. So I could I could see Vegas going with those two this year. But like we said before, I mean, I know Mike alluded to, McPhee had said in the past about, you know, taking, I think he said taking a number of goalies he wouldn't even be possible to take.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, not even just taking that many. I mean, you know, if you take like four, you keep two, you trade two. I mean, Arizona needs a goalie, Buffalo. There's a couple other teams out there that need either a starter or a backup. You know, any team that Vegas takes a goalie from is going to lose a goalie. But the thing that I keep coming back to with these trades is, you know, the obvious counter to that is, well, you know, oh, they're going to take Mrazek and trade him. Then why couldn't Holland trade him? It seems like the trade market leading up to the expansion draft was weird. It was different. There was a lot of rumblings about, you know, from, you know, professional hockey writers, you know, tweeting leading up to the expansion draft, that there was a lot of GMs that were waiting to see what other teams expose, you know, players, because you could have, say, for example, I mean, this is just hypothetical. I'm not even saying this would be the best value, but like, let's say Holland wanted a first for Mrazek just to make up something. Arizona didn't want to do it. Arizona can now go to Vegas and say, look, you draft Mrazek and we'll give you a second. Or whatever. And if Vegas thinks, hey, that's better value than I can get for any other player on the Red Wings, then they have the incentive to do that trade. You know, so they could make the trade through Vegas at a lesser value or lesser cost to the team trading for him than they would have before. That's what I see happening. As always, could be wrong. But
and I think there's some truth to what you said, and there's some solid thought there, because, you know, GMs may be in love with their own prospects. You know, Colin might not like Mrazek's attitude, but he drafted him, so he needs to get value back for him, where McPhee might just be like, hey, he's just an asset. So, like, I went from nothing, now I have a second-round pick. and that's more valuable to me. So
exactly. I mean, I think if he's smart, and I mean, it seems like he's thinking this way with all these side deals, you know, basically McPhee should look at this in one way is how can I get the most value from each team, whether that be a player, whether that, you know, the player that'll stay on our team, a player that I can turn around and trade, or the team sending me players, picks, whatever, to take another player that, you know, will either be on my team or I can turn around and trade for, you know, a really low cost, but still something. So if he's smart, that's what he'll do. And it seems to be like his goal is to just acquire as many assets as possible.
Yeah, he does have two rosters to fill out, essentially. He's got not only the Vegas roster, but he's got the Chicago Wolves that he has to at least partially stock. And you figure by the end of this weekend, he's going to have at least 40 players under contract in contract talks. But that still leaves him a little bit short because roster limit is, what, 50 players? Most teams carry at least 46, if I remember contracts. Correctly. Yeah. So he's still got some spots to fill out. So trades are going to happen. They might happen now. They might happen at the draft. But they're going to happen.
Yeah. Draft where Vegas has, like, half the first round.
Yeah.
It could very well be.
Yeah, because they switched up. Like, when they first – George McPhee was first starting to talk about it, he's like, I want to be competitive out of the gate because that's what a GM is going to say. And now you've seen it slowly evolve to the, oh, no, we're going to be smart. we want to be a promising team, but we're also trying to collect assets. Like, but, yeah, there is an argument that the trade it's going to look different after the draft than it did before. So there is an argument to be made for that. Like, Arizona is going to be looking for a goalie right out of the bat. There is an argument that Vegas could possibly take Linus Ullmark out of Buffalo just to force them to have to go looking for a goalie after their expansion draft. Because it's not like there's a great deal of, I don't know. We'll get to whoever you guys think Buffalo is going to take. They're going to take from Buffalo. But looking at the list of exposed players out of there, it's like, woof. Yeah. Colorado, they exposed Calvin Pekard and kept protected Semyon Varlamov. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's an argument to be made there. You take Pekard, and then you force him to trade one of the many goalies you've taken. So I think if you're looking at taking best player available in terms of the guy who is going to give you the most value, Peter Mrazek is a no-brainer from Detroit, but there are arguments all over. We've seen mock drafts have Sproul taken. We've seen Ouellette taken.
Glenn Denning.
Glenn Denning. Yeah, we've seen Darren Helm taken. Apparently, somebody on Twitter said that he saw 7 mock drafts that took Erickson. I'm like, I have no idea where the hell you're looking at mock drafts.
Surface of the sun, because that is a hot take.
Yeah, like, I could see one of the young defensemen getting taken, just because one thing that Vegas may want to consider is taking a couple of shots for some home runs, and there's still the outside chance that Ryan Sproul turns into the really big, really booming shot kind of defenseman that we were hoping he would be. So it's not completely outside of the realm of possibility that they go for a guy, one of our guys with huge upside, just because they can kind of afford that gamble right now. But I don't know why they wouldn't take Mrazek, honestly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this entire situation is essentially low risk, high reward for Vegas. They get free crack at least 30 players for a 23-man roster. Why not go for, call it, 20 sure things and 10 home runs?
Yeah, that's what I'd do.
Yeah. And I mean, some of the young guys available, they're going to have the chance to do that. I mean, Toronto ended up leaving Brendan Leipzig exposed, and I believe Kirby Reichel as well. Yeah. If I'm George McPhee, I am calling up Toronto and I'm saying, look, I'm taking one of these guys. You can pay me not to, but if you don't, be prepared. And hopefully you walk out of there with, you know, one of them and a whole bunch of draft picks, or maybe neither of them in a lesser prospect, and even more draft picks on top of that. But extort the living bejesus out of these.
Quick sidebar. Do you guys also get the feeling that George McPhee is just loving all of this like attention and like, being the biggest mob boss? Like, hey, if you don't want me to take your players, you've got until tomorrow at noon or you'll never see your protected guy, unprotected guys alive again.
Like, I've got this image in my head of George McPhee as Donbot from Futurama.
I like it.
Like, hey, Buffalo, that's a nice goalie. That would be a shame if something happened to it.
Be a shame if I had to put the clamps on him.
Yeah, with that press release, he definitely is loving it. That was one of the better press releases in a while.
Guys, outside of the wings, any names, or I guess names of players that are available that surprised you, or as far as the trades that we've kind of heard rumblings about because nothing's official, anything out there that you're like, whoa, I didn't expect that to happen, or just that intrigued you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to take a lot. I'll just take one of these. What I thought was the biggest blunder, because originally I had the Islanders, because they protected a young defenseman who's not bad. He's just not like Vegas is never going to take him in a million years. This guy Pelech, and in doing so, they exposed Dylan Strome, Calvin DeHaan, Brock Nelson, you know, all of whom have more value, you know, like we were talking about before about value. Now, they couldn't have protected all of them, but I don't know why they didn't just protect DeHaan. And then so maybe their ransom to Vegas that they've apparently paid would be less. But that's not as bad as it seemed. But for me, the one that just makes no sense was Florida, because, you know, I wrote about this in my article. The Panthers, in my opinion, unless there's something else going on, they made a huge unforced error, because they had somebody they had to protect, and then the only other two players that fit the exposure requirement, meaning that one of them had to be exposed, was Jason Demers and Aaron Ekblad. Florida had months. All they had to do was just sign a veteran defenseman that was expansion, you know, that fit the eligibility requirements, sign him to a 1-year league minimum contract. I mean, there's plenty of them out there. Like, you know, we're doing the expansion list, you know, plenty of teams have guys like that available. It seems like they easily could have done it. I don't know why they didn't. And then on top of that, then they went with the 8+1 option, which meant that they left Jason Demers and Jonathan Marchessault exposed. And the latest, you know, before we recorded this, I saw a tweet come through that apparently Florida doesn't have a deal in place. Obviously, that could be wrong. But I mean, that would just like losing Marchessault for nothing would be insane. I don't know what they were thinking.
They weren't. Somebody threw their protection list together as a joke and accidentally hit send. Yeah. But as far as surprises go, I'm going to go the opposite direction of you, Peter, because you knocked it out of the park with the, oh my God, what the hell did you do moves in your article. But the one that surprised me, and the more I thought about it was, wow, this was smart, was the Penguins going with an 8-1 protection scheme, because they managed to protect, first of all, Matt Murray with getting Fleury to waive his NMC, and whatever snake oil they sold there, way to go. But with going 8-1, they get their big three out of the way that already have the no movement clauses up front. So Crosby, Malkin, and Kessel. Then they protect Hornqvist. And then after that, they just go right to the defense with Letang, Mata, Schultz, and Brian Demoulin. And I know we had talked about doing the 7-3-1 for them, and figuring that, well, they might get uncomfortable somewhere, but whoever they lose will be replaceable. But by doing the 8-1, they're essentially looking at their forwards and saying, whoever plays with Crosby, Crosby makes them better. Whoever plays with Malkin, Malkin makes them better. Whoever plays with Kessel, Kessel makes them better. Whoever plays with Hornqvist, Hornqvist makes them better. Hold those guys. Keep the cup-winning defense intact, and they might keep running into the finals for the next couple of years until some of these contracts start expiring. And that was something that I truthfully didn't even think of doing. Peter, I don't know if you thought of it, but I think that was really, really surprising and really, really smart by Penguins management, considering the players they have.
You know, we've seen that it doesn't really, you know, I mean, Crosby seems to do better with, you know, with quote unquote lesser talent. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, I think I'm pretty sure when they first got Kessel, they tried Crosby and Kessel and it just didn't work.
I do think they tried the super line of Crosby, Kessel, Malkin.
So for whatever reason, you know, I mean, if you, you know, the Penguins seem to be able to make it work with, you know, their top guys, obviously, you know, they have two of the best, you know, two of the best forwards in the world easily. Mm-hmm. And they just keep replacing players. So, I mean, like you said, it doesn't really make, you know, I mean, they're probably not going to want to lose whoever it is they lose, but it's not going to be a huge blow. So, yeah. It makes sense. It was pretty smart.
JJ, you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here. I was just listening. I think the only thing I would have to add to that is I don't know why the Coyotes would protect Nick Cousins over Alex Burmistrov. I fully hate that move.
It's just because they just traded for him. But that being said, I don't know why they traded for him.
I mean, when I was doing my mock draft, that was one of the first picks I made. I was like, that's a pretty easy one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think mostly what I'm curious about is what exactly these teams are spending to protect players. Especially, I'm really looking forward to seeing what exactly Anaheim is giving up to protect either Vatanen or Josh Manson. Because,
or both. Yeah, both, yeah, actually.
Because they don't have a first-rounder this year. But their window should still be open long enough to, like, be worth giving a first-rounder next year. But I don't know why Vegas would take a 2018 first-rounder that's not expected to be anything above or anything better than the 20th overall, rather than just taking one of those guys who are going to be really worth it. So I'm really curious to see how exactly Anaheim has worked that out specifically.
I mean, you think they gave him like, we'll give you a second this year and our first next year, or is it like our next year first? Or
I would say and or.
It's got to be at least a first next year, and probably the second this year, and there's going to be something on top of it. I mean, protecting those two guys out of Anaheim, in addition to the rest of that roster, Vegas should have driven out there and just looked them in the eyes and said, "You're selling us your team, or you're giving us these guys. Take your pick."
Yeah, because who the hell else for Anaheim do you even take? They're Clayton Stoner. Like, outside of those two,
Logan Shaw.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think I printed it out and threw a dart at it, and I forget who. I don't even remember who I picked. I couldn't even.
I'm just gonna say, and I'm probably gonna offend a number of our listeners. Logan Shaw is an asshole name. I don't know anything about that kid, but that kid is an asshole name.
Yeah.
Is it more for the Logan or the Shaw?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I saw somebody did a top UFAs that might go piece and suggested that Patrick Eaves may be willing to sign with Vegas. But if I'm Vegas, I'm wary of that, and I know Eaves had some great success once he got to Dallas, and he largely kept it going with Anaheim. But at 33, and with his history of concussions, like if Vegas is going to sign him, it better be only to a 1-year deal.
Couldn't Vegas, in theory, just okay, Patrick Eaves, we want to sign you, and we're gonna, you know, they agree to something, but then they don't actually sign it till after the expansion draft. So then
they take another player. They could.
Yeah. Like that's legal, right?
I mean, it's not
technically legal, but you can't prove it.
Yeah.
Right.
Basically.
Like, I mean, for how long before they had the early negotiating window did players sign with a new team on July 1st at 12:01? You know, right. I mean, shit like that.
You could always say like, oh, we couldn't come to terms on a contract. And then, you know, oh, July 1st hit and we upped it a little bit because we knew what his demands were and we knew where we were. And we came up and met his demands. And now we have an agreement. We didn't.
Yeah, that,
you know? It's a dang clear handshake deal. It's not legal, right. But
yeah. Yeah. So it's complicated like that, but yeah, it can totally happen, and I expect that with at least one or two teams, it will happen.
Yeah. Also, apparently Columbus is giving up their first, and I don't know why. Like, I don't know, like, who they're trying to protect here.
They're dumping Clarkson.
They were trying to dump Clarkson. They were trying to...
It's mostly about dumping Clarkson.
I think I saw they wanted to protect Josh Anderson.
They wanted to protect Josh Anderson, Anton Forsberg, and Jonas Korpisalo. We don't have any confirmation that they've actually done that.
Yeah, but I guess they...
Yeah, the rumor is in place that they were sending assets to Vegas. And this is from the Columbus Dispatch, but there's a huge glaring error in this. So everybody listening, take this with a grain of salt. The rumor was Columbus was sending assets to Vegas to force them to take one of Calvert, Carlson, or Ryan Murray. The problem with that is Columbus went ahead and protected Ryan Murray. So we don't know where exactly the accuracy is in that. I'm willing to bet that they are sending assets to Vegas. I'm betting it's to protect guys specifically like Jack Johnson, Jonas Korpisalo, Anton Forsberg, and maybe even to keep them from talking to Sam Gagner. Because from my standpoint, it looks like they would be getting rid of the David Clarkson thing so that they could try to make some kind of off-season room to sign Gagner to a new contract. But again, we have no confirmation as to where any of that falls on the spectrum of real or total BS.
And personally, I hope that they are spending assets, protection money for their non-Jonas Korpisalo goalie, the current RFA, because then that protection money could be called the safety dansk.
Also, just real quick, not to step on your joke, because it was great.
No, please.
I don't know if you guys saw, I know actually Jeff posted at least one of these versions. Arthur Staple is a beat writer for the New York Islanders. And there's been rumors for a while that they were going to do something, obviously, like I said before, because of their strange protection scheme. And it came out tonight that they're sending, along with their first round pick, they're sending Mikhail Grabowski to Vegas. And I just double checked because I was pretty sure on this. He didn't even play this last year. He's been out with concussion stuff. So I don't know if he will play again, but that looks like a salary dump to try to free up money to keep Tavares in town before the Islanders fold.
What's his actual like money? What's the actual money? Is it like dollar cap hit and dollars are exactly the same for him?
Grabowski is like, let me see off the top of my head, about 5 million. Let me see.
Oh, he's getting paid 6 million.
Exactly 5 million cap hit.
Okay, well, I was just wondering because Arizona...
His cap hit is $5 million, his salary this year is $6 million.
Okay, so that doesn't really
work expires
for,
next
for
year.
Arizona to flip to him.
Yeah.
To them. I'm curious what Minnesota's going to end up doing.
Yeah.
Because one of the big-time hockey guys tweeted out that as of Saturday night, they didn't have any deals in place. I haven't seen anything since, but I got to imagine they're doing something.
Yeah, well, they did the good thing in getting Stahl to waive his no-movement clause so that they could protect Zucker. Because if they didn't do that, Zucker absolutely had to be the choice from Minnesota. As good as some of their defensemen are, in my mind, it had to be Zucker.
Minnesota doesn't have a first or second this year, and they don't have a second next year. So that's
going to make things interesting. Uh-huh. They may not even have the assets to pay extra protection on, what was it, Dumba that they left?
Yeah,
exposed.
And Scandella to a lesser extent.
Yeah, Scandella definitely to a lesser extent, but still not out of the realm of possibly wanted. But it's going to be interesting watching what they do. And they do have a young guy that I know they played a couple of games that's supposed to be kind of promising in Gustav Olofsson. So maybe they aren't quite so worried about losing Dumba or Scandella, but I can't see them not being
poor asset management.
I still think it would be hilarious. Like, I don't know why Vegas would do this if other than to hurt Minnesota, but I think they ought to take Eric Staal. because Minnesota's window is not going to be open for very much longer, and Eric Staal is basically propping it open right now. If you take one of their, like, their best center away from them, either Hermann or Miku Koivu, you can make an argument either way. That's going to, like, that's going to kneecap them for the next season, and that would be funny to me.
And you it's got a real possibility of happening because their top center right now is Vadim Shipachyov out of the KHL, who is supposed to be a fantastic playmaker, but we have no idea how well he's going to translate from KHL to NHL. And if it's anything like Alexander Radulov, which we saw in Montreal, it'll be fairly decently. But is he actual 1C material in the NHL? Who knows? Eric Staal's had that experience.
And Staal's a veteran guy. You could make a captain there too and whatnot.
Yeah, he could win a C right away.
Yeah, Vegas has a lot of decent options for center, and Eric Staal is definitely along there. You know, they've got – you could take Burmistrov, or you could take Staal, or you can get Thomas Plekanec out of Montreal.
Luke Glendang.
Brock Nelson.
Drew Miller.
You could have – there's a lot of, like, 3Cs who probably couldn't really be consistent 2Cs in that whole group. Eric Staal would give them a 1C right off. It would give them and if Shipachyov, if Chips Ahoy.
Shipachyov.
Sure.
Ship Hatch E off. There we go.
Chips Ahoy, yeah. If he can't handle 1C, then you could argue that Eric Staal would, but I don't know why you'd pass over Dumba unless they paid you draft picks that they don't have, or
promises. Unless you're Dumba.
Yeah, I'm still pissed at him for giving up the number 55. I will never forgive him for that.
Oh, JJ. All right, you guys got anything expansion draft related we didn't talk about that you want to touch on before we go on to reader questions?
Yes, Chicago. They're also paying assets. I know we didn't bring that one up.
Yeah, they're what?
If you want to call them assets, yeah.
They're like, it's can take Van Riemsdyk and we'll give you Kruger. And
yes, the weird thing there is supposedly they were in contact with McPhee ahead of everything and figured out that he was probably going to try to take Trevor Van Riemsdyk if they did the 7-3-1 protection scheme. And they said, look, we'll do an 8-1 and block your ass if we have to. But if you really do want Trevor Van Riemsdyk, we'll let him go. But you have to take Marcus Kruger in a trade as well. And apparently they went for it. So.
Yay.
Whatever. I'm not sure I make that deal, but okay.
Yeah, I'm looking at the list of players they exposed. Like, that's neat.
Yeah.
Jordan Tutu.
Hey, you got a Victor Svedberg.
Yeah.
Kenton Helgeson, who I literally have not heard of before today.
I think he's just a made-up player.
I'm sure he's going to score a big goal against us sometime in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, it'll be almost as many goals as they scored in the playoffs this year.
It'll be more than your
goal for us.
Yeah. I'm good.
All right, and don't skip over Positivity Corner, Jeff. We need
that. Oh, Positivity Corner. I completely forgot about that. All right, fine, JJ. Then let's start with you, Positivity Corner.
I really like you guys. You're fun to talk to, and you keep me grounded. And you've done, especially Mike and Peter, you've done a fantastic job with our coverage of this. It's just let me kind of shirk any responsibility for paying too much attention to it, and for that I thank you, because all of your comments and your articles have been really valuable and really good to read, so I can't thank you enough for that.
Thanks JJ.
Mike, your turn.
I am really positive on Peter here. Yeah, we'll just send the love all around here.
Jeff, there's a pattern here. Just pay attention.
Yeah, because I'm betting nobody outside the couple of us know this, but when the expansion draft got announced, and I right away went to JJ and said that I wanted to cover it, and then I looked at like everything I wanted to do, and it was like half an hour later that I was like, I am not going to be able to do this on my own. So the first person I reached out to was Peter, and I have not regretted that decision for a single second. So, Peter, thanks for all your help on this and having this beautiful internet baby with me.
All right, Peter, your turn.
I don't know if I can top a beautiful internet baby. One of my favorite quotes is, I don't even know the origin of it, but somebody asked a writer if they enjoy writing, and they say, no, but I enjoy having written. And that's pretty much how I feel about this whole expansion draft experience. Like, while it was happening, it was very, you know, time consuming and stressful. But I'm really glad, I'm very proud of what Mike and I were able to do. And like you said, I think we worked really well as a team, and that says a lot about Mike. So that's awesome. I just really, really quick, I just wanted to touch on something that I'm also thankful for. Ian Fleming, I don't know if you guys are familiar with him.
James Bond author?
Exactly. Okay. Different one. He's put together, he's had them for some time. He has kind of like hero charts, but they're for goalies. They're save charts. And if you, it's like dispelling voodoo.com, or if you just search for like save charts, they'll come up. And you can compare goalies against each other. You can compare them against, the NHL goalies making $4 million to $5 million or something like that. You can compare them, for 1 year or over a period of 3 years. So I keep seeing people talking about like save percentage and like unadjusted save percentage and goals against average. And so I just want to point people there, because there's so many better stats that people could use, because goalies are incredibly hard to evaluate. He basically puts all, the top stats that you can use to evaluate goalies all in one fun place to find. So just wanted to make sure to give him a shout out.
Last but not least, I'm very happy that all the new jerseys are going to be released tomorrow, because I'm a jersey snob and I'm really looking forward to seeing all the subtle changes to everyone's sweater. So when I go to the games, I can ridicule people under my breath for buying fake jerseys and having incorrect uniforms that they're wearing.
I can't wait for that.
That'll be a 250 comment post.
I do want to see Vegas's new uniforms.
And now, are you going to get a Vegas uni with the Wings selection on it?
No,
not a chance.
Vegas Knights, Brendan Smith, number two, baby.
he wouldn't be the Wings selection though. So I don't know. I'm not expecting many changes for the Wings, and that's pretty much expected from everybody, I think, and that's fine. I don't want them to make any changes, but I like uniforms, so I'm going to spend my day looking at pictures tomorrow. We should do reader questions. JJ, take it away.
All right. Starting off with NMU, who asks, if the Wings were to lose Mrazek to the expansion draft, would it be good to move up in the second round and take Jake Oettinger from Boston College? Oettinger?
I should know that, but I don't. Weird that he asked that question, or she, NMU, because it's going to be in quick hits, but Jeff Merrick did his mock draft, and in his lead to that, he mentioned that there's been a lot of talk of the Wings trying to acquire another first-round pick, perhaps to take a goalie, so I found that very interesting, and the Jake kid, he's actually BU, not BC, he's one of the top prospects, so that might be something where there's smoke, there's fire. Who knows? I think that's a wrong move. But anyway,
so it would be a good move. Like, I don't know how far up in the second round you can move from, seventh.
Yeah, I think what this guy is supposed to go early in the second, but I haven't seen any mocks with a goalie in the first round, right? Have you?
No.
But who knows how that'll change with Vegas possibly hamstringing some clubs.
Right. I have a Vegas thought too, and I don't know if I should say it now or wait, but
I'd get it out.
Go for it.
All right. Why not? So I say Vegas gets like 4 or 5 first round picks this year, right?
Right.
And they got a shit ton of seconds. And there were reports earlier a couple weeks ago that the Devils were really looking at defensemen and scouting defensemen and everything. So they might want Miro Heiskanen or whatever, Kyle McCarr, Maker, I don't know how you pronounce his name specifically, but what's, you know, what if Vegas gets all these first round picks and they're like, we're going to give you our sixth overall pick. We'll give you another first round pick and we give you a second or something like that. Cause they've got so many of them to move up to number one. And then they take Nolan or Nico and they got their like face of the franchise. Like, I think that might happen.
I wouldn't be too surprised to see that. I mean, I'm not saying I think it'll happen, but I wouldn't be surprised.
That's my bold prediction for this week.
I can't see Jersey wanting
to move back to sixth, but it's not insane.
I mean, if it guarantees them one of those two defensemen, which it probably does, because what Nico, Nolan, Velarde, I guess both defensemen could go, but I don't know. I think it does. Anyway, kind of off topic there, but
it would be cool to see. I'm in terms of goalies, I kind of hate as a concept drafting a goalie before the third round, but I have shitty goalie opinions, so don't listen to me.
Well, I mean, in all fairness, goalies are voodoo.
Yeah, that's exactly
Matt Murray was a third rounder.
I can't get Jack Campbell out of my head in terms of drafting goalies.
Yeah, but Vasilevsky was a first rounder.
Yeah, 19th overall.
Yeah, good they golf. Got that pick from us. So.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, it happens, but.
I remember when it used to be cool to take a goalie first overall.
Isn't DiPietro? Is the DiPietro in this draft? Is he related? Is it his brother? His cousin?
God, I don't know.
Nephew?
Probably.
DP.
Take him.
They're all over the place. Moving on, Baby Larks asks, what is likely the single worst and best move or decision we could make as an organization this offseason?
The worst is re-signing Dan Cleary.
He's retiring, so that's
bringing him out of retirement. I mean, realistically, the worst move would involve getting rid of Lark and Mantha or Athanasiou, I think. Those are three guys you need to hold on to. The best is somehow not trading those guys and landing a top defenseman.
I think the worst move would be going all in on Kevin Shattenkirk and overpaying him by 2 years and $2 million more than anybody else offered. Like something ridiculous where he would have to be like, oh, well, I really want to be here, but I'm going to go to Detroit and get paid.
Well, I do like money, so.
Because the Wings have just under $8 million right now.
12.
Something with the just cap escalation. If we lose Mrazek.
12 if you lose Mrazek.
You drop Bronson.
Oh, I don't know. Okay, so you
LTI
you
have about, or Franzen.
Oh, yeah, that's
so you
right.
You have about 12, and then if you lose Mrazek, you have 16, and what, you got to sign Athanasiou, and you have to sign
Tatar.
You're going to have room to do something stupid.
I wasn't going to be specific. I was just going to say the worst move would be just being heavily involved in the free agent market.
Yeah, I would say literally signing any non-Detroit free agent to
Vanek.
Kyle...
That's more than a year.
Chat today, 4 years, $20 million for Thomas Vanek.
Yeah.
That would be awful.
Yeah. I don't know what the best decision we could make as an organization this season would be. Probably just to stand pat with, as much as we hate saying it, I like our team. And,
they absolutely should.
Yeah. Play the young guys.
Unless it's a, you know, a 1 year type deal that you flip at the deadline.
Yeah, somebody cheap that's like Vanek was for us last year, exactly. Low risk, high reward, and then just send them out for draft picks.
That would be the best thing we could do. Players.
Exactly. Yeah.
As for which is more likely to happen, something that's going to drive me to drink.
Yeah, probably.
I don't know. I think Stan Pat is the best decision is probably more likely than the worst decision. Whatever. Operator Z wants to know, with Shane gone to Vegas, who fills the spot?
Nozick.
Yep, easy question.
He won't be there.
Sugar Shane? Mouse wants us to look at, yeah, Shane gone to Vegas. He comes back. We trade for him. We trade our first rounder for him, as is Detroit's want to do. Sugar Mouse wants to know, can tradition. You review the strengths, weaknesses, and ultimate potential of each of our young defensemen? We're going to rapid fire this one. Where's Hronek going to end up? Third pair, first pair?
Second.
I'm going to go bold. First pair.
Third pair.
First.
First. Sorry, Arby.
2-3 tweener.
Second.
First.
He's a Surrey good RV. Second pair, and he's a bad first pair. Not a bad
Surrey
first
RV
pair.
Surrey RV will be so he'll second fit in, he'll pair fit in with Higgins.
I look at it like Cronwell was that great second pair guy, but he's not quite that mm-hmm. first pair guy. So, like, that would be – that's
yeah,
that's
he needs my, his Brad Stewart to level him out.
Right.
Nick Jensen.
Second pair.
He's like a 2-3.
A 4.
Third pair fourth, flame out.
A 4. I mean second, third pair, not 2-3 number.
Ouellette.
Second pair.
Second.
Low second pair.
They're all second pairing.
I know. We have a lot of seconds.
Just kidding. He's 70.
Healthy scratch.
Yeah. Renew 70.
In the AHL. First, second pair AHL.
Russo.
Healthy third. Scratch.
Yeah. Third pair best.
Yeah.
Pickens.
I think he ends up being a third pair guy.
Second pair with Surrey RV. Tiny Terrors.
Yeah, I'll say second.
Top pair possession driver. Enchalowski.
Number one defenseman. I'm just kidding.
I want him to be a number one so bad.
I hope
just because I want to pull up. I want to pull up. I want to pull up every Chikrin post and just comment and open up the comments again and just reply.
just open up the comments and drop the poop emoji right as the next comment.
I don't have high hopes for him, but I'd really like to see him kind of have a great next season. So
where was he? St. Cloud State?
Yeah,
not exactly a national power.
No, he had like what 13
good for
points?
Developing defensemen, aren't they? I thought that was like the thing on that.
That's what they do.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Come on, man.
He will be the Lidstrom to Higgins Rafalski.
Okay, let's move on.
Sugar Mouse again. What are the odds that Ken Holland is the Red Wings GM when the 2018-19 season starts?
50,
low, but
this
it's
is his last year, right? In his current contract?
Last year's contract,
yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to stick with this is it. After this
if this year goes really poorly, I don't think he's fired per se, but they'll mutually part ways.
Yeah, I don't think he'll be GM, but I think he'll still be with the organization.
I'll give you a 50-50 on it. I don't know. I don't have a good enough read.
He'll be the puppet master when Draper's making all the moves.
MC Fubar wants to know if we actually have a plan for the organization, and we're not answering that one. Zamlau wants to know, I hadn't thought of it until now, but now the single worst immediate effect of losing Mrazek is that it won't clear any log jams we wanted to clear. In fact, it creates a deficit at the second goalie position that doesn't have a clear solution. If the reports of Mrazek's attitude are true, but he still returns to form, would it be worse to have him back or have him gone?
It would be worse to have him back. If the reports are true,
No, not if he returns to form. It's
no, but you don't want like if it's as bad as like people are saying. You don't want a
winning
player.
Cures everything, and if he's very good and they're winning, I'd rather
for a young team.
Yeah,
you need a not to have a locker room cancer.
Yeah, but if the team is winning, he's not quite the poison pill.
Exactly,
you know. Like maybe he calms down if he's not going.
Oh, this and I don't
damn defense in front of me can't stop anything. Blah blah blah.
Yeah,
not that he's saying that, but you know,
if he returns to form, it's worse to have him gone.
Yeah, if he's Vezina caliber, it's worse to have him gone, bar none. But it has to be that form.
That would be increasing form.
Yeah.
No, because he has been temporarily
Vezina caliber.
Yes.
But I don't think that we can confidently say that's his form.
Okay.
I'd agree
with that. Mm. Yeah, that's fair. But I don't think it creates a deficit if we lose him.
No.
That doesn't have a clear solution. Because Corot is the pretty clear solution to having no backup. It's just that, you know, Howard's had the past couple of years to go easy, and instead of going 1A, 1B, he's now back to being solid number one.
And you can sign some backup goalie if you need to. I mean,
or trade for one from Vegas.
Exactly. If you're not looking to spend a lot of money and you're not looking for someone to compete with Howard. So
come on down to George McPhee's bargain goalie shop.
All right. Case Denji says, do you think Abby is really viewed as the next captain? I like the guy enough, but Hank has a year or two left at least, and I was kind of thinking Larkin would come into his own by then and assume that role. I like Abby well enough, and I think he's grade A along with Cronwall, but I'm not really sure I see him as a Red Wings captain.
I think the team really views him as the next potential captain. I don't view him that way, though.
Yeah, I'm aboard with that. That's pretty much
right. Yeah, see, I'm afraid of the team wanting him to be the next captain because he is the Michigan boy, the gritty guy, the, you know, loves the Wings, grew up doing that. But so is Larkin. And, like, I don't get
why I don't, you
wouldn't do that because Larkin, I think, would sell more tickets as the captain.
I don't want Larkin as the captain either as of right now.
I'd rather
I don't
have think, Larkin than Abdelkader.
Well, yes, but that's a different question entirely. The next captain, I don't think the next captain is on the team yet.
I think very well might be true.
Yeah.
Then ahead, I have to answer Case Denji's question. I do think that Abby is really viewed as the next captain right now.
Yes, the team definitely views that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, Zetterberg's contract runs through, what, 2021? He's
got 4 years left.
Yeah. They're not taking the C off his chest.
No.
All right. So in the next 4 years, we've definitely got the possibility of somebody like Larkin developing into that role.
It could be now.
Yeah, I don't think people view Abby as the next captain. I think they see him as a leader in the locker room, and somebody that even if they're not putting up, they know how to do things a certain way that they like, not necessarily the right way, but he does things management likes. But I think there's a lot of time for somebody else to come up and take the captain mantle. Because if you look at our last three captains, Zetterberg is, by all accounts, great personality, but he puts up. Lidstrom, you know, great personality, but he put up. Yzerman, great personality, but he put up. Abdelkader, with the exception of one season with Pavel Datsyuk, does not put up numbers.
Yeah. Forever Kicking Tires had a really good one that had me going. Starts with Fireken Holland. How does a veteran GM botch a protection list this bad? Given this player has his ups and downs, but he's critical to our system, organization, and of course the fans, how the hell is Eric Tangrady unprotected? And really, right up until I got Eric Tangrady, I'm like, so mad at that guy. So, good work on that one, Forever Kicking Tires. And then we've got two FMKs. Ken Holland, Pierre Maguire, Mike Milbury.
Okay. Sorry.
Kill Mike Milbury. That's not even a question.
The easiest one is marry Ken Holland because he's loyal.
Yes. Are we all in agreement on that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then... Now I was saying with Pierre, then you get to hear like your entire backstory.
I don't know, Mike Milbury might bring a shoe into things.
Yeah, I think I got a kill. I think I've got a K. Pierre Maguire, just I can't stand even looking at that guy, let alone talking to him. And I mean, you know. Two bald-headed guys in the same room? No. But I don't want to listen to him or Mike Milbury talk. So I mean, either way,
you don't have to talk to the person you're effing.
I don't know. Afterwards, Pierre's probably just going to. How you know Edzo?
All right. The next FMK is Holland, Blashill, and Mrazek.
I think that's easy. I think you kill Holland and you marry Blashill.
Yep. Yeah. I agree.
I don't know. Mrazek, even if he's got attitude problems, like
yeah, but it's could be one
fun
night.
That could be
not
fun.
Even a night. It could be an hour. It could be 5 minutes.
Yeah.
That when he's on, he's on.
Yeah. Get on it. All right, I'm done with this. Yeah.
Just make sure you just don't tell him you got. You know just don't tell him you got somebody lined up next.
Yeah. They're oh God, all, where's my wife? I feel like I need my wife now.
They're all goalies, guys.
Mm.
All right. The next couple of questions are more Mrazek talk, which we've covered at length, and then a couple of questions too bitter that I'm not going to ask. Hall R2121, who will make the playoffs first, Knights or Wings, or both? How soon and why?
I almost lean towards the Knights because technically the percentages might be better because there's less teams out in the West. I think the Atlantic's going to be tough.
Yeah, the Knights are going to have easier packs. Like tough. Pacific, right?
Yeah.
Still going to have the Penguins. The Leafs are better. The Habs are, you know, the next couple years.
Maybe. Oh, who knows what's going to happen with the Habs and Bergevin.
Yeah.
Keep making smart moves.
I mean, the Capitals are still there. The Rangers aren't terrible. The Flyers are going to get Nico or Nolan. Is that going to help them?
Tampa's going to have Stamkos for a whole season again soon.
Ottawa just made the conference final. Kind of, you know, shit. I have the Knights. I'm like trying not to be like just sound negative, but I don't know.
I say Vegas just because of the divisions. That's enough.
I don't
playoffs in the same year and meet in the cup final.
Sweet.
There you go.
In what, 2050?
Brandon Smith will score the cup winning goal for the Wings because they're going to get him back.
Oh, which first round pick are we going to trade for him?
2029.
Nice.
Let's see. If we make the playoffs, will Holland's contract be renewed?
I mean, yeah, probably.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'd say yeah.
All right. The question everybody was waiting for: who would win in a fight? 100 duck-sized golden knights or one knight-sized golden duck?
Does the duck have opposable thumbs? I probably should have put that in the mailbag, shouldn't I?
Does he have a sword and a helmet?
Well, no, I think the sword and helmet are...
It's a duck made of gold. It's the size of a person.
Yeah.
Or maybe the size of a person in armor on a horse.
I mean, I wouldn't want to fight one knight-sized golden duck because gold, like, you wouldn't be able to pierce it, right? Like, I guess you'd have to melt it.
It'd be a metal duck the size of a dude on a horse. So, I mean.
Yeah, I'll do the 100 duck sized golden knights in this one.
No, yeah.
The tiny men with swords. No, thank you.
Yeah, but it's like little. It's
you strap
little,
on some shin guards from soccer and you just kick the crap out of them.
That's true. But, like, a duck is, like, it's not like an ant sized knight. It's a duck. Like, ducks aren't tiny. So, like, the sword relative to the size of a duck.
I think
it's more like
a
could
team up together.
A steak knife they've got is their swords. Like I'm thinking, you need some shin pads. Like, do I get
They're all human intelligence.
Yeah,
that's true. So they could team up.
They
but
just climb on each other's shoulders.
But like, it's one big duck.
They're stabbing you in the thigh now.
Yeah, so it's too heavy to move itself. Made of an extremely malleable metal. You just take a sledgehammer to it and you pound it into the shape of a ball, kick it down a hill.
You just get all 100 of them and just like push it towards the nearest source.
Where's Kyle when we need him?
he would have been mad about this. Yeah, he would have muted his microphone by now if this was the question.
I'll still take the duck.
I'll take the 100 men.
It's the duck. It's not even close. Peter's Glove wants to know, what's the likelihood that the Red Wings' next 1D is already in the system in the form of Ronek, Sarjärvi, Chalowski, or someone else?
I already said that. No.
They're not great, but I still think they're going to take a center. And I'm sorry in advance for your username, Peter's Glove, because that's going to go.
Yeah.
Could be Peter Wim's Glove.
There we go.
Yeah. No, he spelled it wrong.
Yeah, it could have been a typo.
Well, you can just change it.
All right. Another is Holland going to get fired question. Pastafarian71 said, let's assume that Mrazek is gone. Okay. Why don't we try to find a replacement at the IHOP in Toledo? Seriously, I saw a dude in there recently. He hasn't seen the svelte side of a quarter ton since junior high school. Just parked that fat bastard in the middle of the net with a box of Tim Hortons Timbits to keep him occupied. The opposing team would have maybe 4 inches of daylight all around him to shoot at. Don't even bother to give him skates. Just have him waddle out there and flip flops. Has any pro team ever tried that? We might revolutionize the position.
This is Charles Wong and the sumo goalie all over again.
Yeah, oh, boy. It's the sumo goalie. It's such a great thought exercise, but yeah, if you give NHL teams 4 inches to shoot, they're going to hit that consistently.
Plus, it would be terribly difficult to pull the goalie.
Yeah.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
The other players would have to, like, carry him off the ice.
All those,
but you'd never have to pull the goalie because you'd shut every team out.
Not with 4 inches on either side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you get a guy that's, like, literally 6 feet by 4 feet is difficult. Yeah. That guy would have difficulty surviving. unless you have to have an actual gear. So, I think that if we miss the playoffs this year, we should actually go with this plan. just for the fun of it, basically.
We can feed him nothing but Little Caesar's pizza.
Yeah, by then Martin Brodeur will be back in that shape.
Yeah. Round.
Let's see. And the very last question, which only came in like 3 minutes ago. Ooh. Timothy Liljegren. A lot of people are really down on him in draft standings and reports. Has anything changed in any of your minds? Anything sticking out in your mind that is worrisome about his style of play?
No, I don't know enough about these prospects other than just on the surface that I've read. But Prashant actually was passed along some ranking system that he trusts and projections, and they had Liljegren that as their top ranked defenseman. So I'm still, if he's there at nine, I'd take him. I would, if the Wings take him, I'm perfectly happy.
Yeah, if he's got Prashant's vote of confidence, then nothing's really changed in my mind. Grab him if we can.
Yeah, I think I would rather take a chance on a guy whose draft stock fell because of a disappointing season for very good reason than maybe on a guy whose draft stock rose on one very good season where he'd previously
been on the board. So you're taking Liljegren over Cody Glass if they're both there?
No, because I still want a center.
But Cody Glass is a guy that had,
I know,
like, came out and had one great season.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, and Liljegren had mono, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So, if it's Martin, was it Nikas? I'm saying that correctly, or Liljegren? You're taking who?
Center.
No matter what. Center. If
well, I mean, it depends. If like
Nolan, Nico, Glass, Velarde, and Mittelstad are all gone, I guess Nikas.
It comes down to, like, is Rasmus in a center?
Yeah, I think I'd so. Take no, he's. Him. I guess he's listed as a center, but I bet he's a winger. You just want to draft Catlin Foot.
So badly.
That would be delicious.
I got a foot fetish.
Yeah. No more questions. I'm not going to ask you guys if you have any final hockey related thoughts. We should do this again soon though, because we'll have a lot to talk about next week. Probably. We'll see if we can figure something out in the schedule. But gentlemen, it's been a pleasure.
It's been an honor.
Thank you as well for being a part of this tonight. For Mike and Peter and JJ and Graham, I'm Jeff, and this has been Winging It Motown Radio.
I'm Kyle.
Good night, everybody. I usually always add Graham at the end. It's just kind of like a thing I was going to try to start.
Thank you for putting up with my mirror joke. I've had time to reflect on that by now, and I appreciate it.
You just can't see doing it over again.
That's right.
I hate you all.